Grade 7 Conference, Lecture 38, the third part of the Renaissance, and our last segment on the spiritual perspective of this time. Now, while time capsule was going off within, at first, a few individualities, but then very strongly spreading across the Italian peninsula, and then over into France and Germany and finally England. And this is also remarkable that one can see the spread of the Renaissance. In fact, I think it's Harvard is working on this massive internet-based chronological timeline on a map that shows, for example, where printing was going on and at what time. And you really see, just looking at the printing presses that first appeared in one city or another, you see where and how the Renaissance was beginning to spread. That's one way. There are other ways as well. And it's almost viral, as we say in nature, but in a good way, by and large, almost epidemic in its quality. So it's not only things like illnesses that can spread that way, or social network viruses, but also something like this. You see that nothing can stop an idea whose time has come. Nothing can stop a soul capacity that is meant to unfold. So that's going on the earth. Those are seeds that the spiritual world has planted, and in accordance with the cosmic clock, 1413 arises and they begin to appear and sprout. However, the spiritual world is very complicated like the earth, and several things can be going on at once, as they were. And I want to point to another very important phenomenon going on parallel with this time, which has an equal, though sometimes opposite, effect on the unfolding of the Renaissance. And this is the work of the archangels. The archangels, and here's another area in which you can look more deeply in the Steiner course, the archangels stand above the angels in terms of their power and their stage of development and, yes, consciousness in the spiritual world. And a group of seven archangels take turns and are given the regency over the earth. So they act more like archai, like time spirits. To some extent, they're promoted to that rank, and they are really on their way to becoming a higher hierarchical being, but they're still archangelic. Archangels, as you may remember from your training, if this was touched on, archangels rule over large groups of people. They're always interested in groupings. And they're very connected also to language. Archangels really are those who have imbued human beings with the capacity to express themselves in languages and differentiate those languages. So this is why it will often be one nation, one group, that begins a completely new impulse. In our time, of course, it's the English-speaking world that has had such incredible influence over the rest of the world. At the time of the Renaissance, obviously, Latin, the great language of the intellectual soul, was fading away. And the vernacular languages were beginning to assert themselves, and Italian proved to be the right one to awaken the nascent forces of the consciousness soul. So these are archangels at work, working with groups on the Italian peninsula, and as we'll see, particularly at first, focusing on Florence, then, to a lesser extent, Milan, Bologna, and Rome next, asserting itself in a completely new way later in the Renaissance period. So the archangels now are handing over the rulership from one to another. And as it happened, as the Renaissance began to unfold, there was a handing over of the regency of the earth from the archangel Raphael, who had been guiding the earth for about 350 years. Now it was the turn of the archangel Gabriel, or Gabriel. It shouldn't surprise us how many artists at the time of the early Renaissance in particular felt impelled to paint the scene of the Annunciation. The Annunciation is not seen very much in the Middle Ages, but it's seen a lot at the time of the Renaissance, and most of the greatest artists set themselves to depicting this. And there we see Gabriel, the archangel of the Annunciation. Why does Gabriel announce the birth? Because this is Gabriel's great interest. Each archangel has his particular character, and Gabriel's deep interest is the family, the dynasty, heredity. Gabriel is the archangel, we might say, of the very young child. Gabriel is the one who is helping the kindergarten teacher. Gabriel's most interested in human beings before the age of seven, and particularly in the first 3 years of life, and in the womb, and in the pre-earthly experiences before birth. This is a great interest of Gabriel. Now, think about this for a moment. On the one hand, there within the individual human being, the individuality is coming to the fore and expressing itself very strongly. And indeed, Steiner says this works so strongly that there's a temptation to just sort of leave one's family, leave one's people, leave one's language, leave one's nation, just, you know, throw it all out to find myself, to go on, you know, the personal vision quest, leaving everything behind. So everyone who carries a consciousness soul is constantly feeling this. And then there are many other mitigating factors, such as the fact that one has gotten into a whole bunch of human relationships that cannot be and should not be thrown over so quickly. But anyway, there's that strong force for individuality. And it's as though the spiritual world brings a parallel current so that that individualization can't go so quickly that there's just war of all against all, which the consciousness soul is always on the verge of bringing, but rather there's a balancing out. Because with Gabriel, it's really love your mother, nurture your child. The family is everything. We have to be careful who we marry and whose child we bear, because we want to be sure that the family stays strong. And everything gets seen in terms of the family and who's going to marry whom. This is a very big deal for the Archangel Gabriel. And we, of course, saw this in the life of Eleanor, who, though she had something of the seed, the harbinger of the consciousness soul living within her, boy, was she ever big on family. So big that she'll destroy her family in order to strengthen her family. And then she runs around Europe as the great matchmaker, or yenta, as we'd say in Yiddish, making sure that her daughters, in particular, find the right men so that the dynasty can continue. And indeed, it did for a long time. Very Gabrielic activity there. And we'll see the importance of certain families in actually becoming progenitors of the Renaissance itself. Something else happens, though, which is very interesting and maybe not anticipated by the spiritual world. when the consciousness soul, which gets very interested in the physical nature of the human being, when that gets together with the Gabrielic forces, which are very interested in birth and early childhood, what happens? People start to ask questions about how the physical human being actually gets here. No, it's not going to be the stork anymore, and it's not going to be under the cabbage leaves anymore. They're going to start asking some very specific questions. And this is where we have, from 1 week, 1 month, 1 year to another, basically all that we know now about the reproduction of the human being, the reproductive forces, how babies are made and how they are born. There's a fascination in this, and under Gabrielle's patronage, we could say, suddenly the human body literally and figuratively opens up to the observant eyes of consciousness soul artists, and they become scientists, or scientists become artists, and we have remarkable understanding from 1 year to the next that demythologizes the coming into being of the human being and opens up the world of reproduction. And I should just mention as a footnote that Gabrielle's rule also extends 350 years or thereabouts, and Steiner gives us again an exact date for the end of Gabrielle's regency and the beginning of Michael's regency, the Michaelic age in which we live today, as 1879. And up until this time, we see incredible developments in the understanding of not only reproductive forces, but the developing science of genetics, understanding the forces that give us our eye color, our hair color, our tendency towards strength or weakness, or one congenital illness or another. All of this also arises under the rulership of Gabrielle. And then Steiner says, with the onset of the Michaelic age, now we need to be looking at all of this in a non-Gabrielic way and examine it as forces of spirit actually working in the human being. But clearly, except in very small circles, this is not happening. So what happens? Genetics has, in a way, outworn its welcome as something spiritually necessary, and it becomes ever more materialized. And we see then the consciousness soul urge to use, to manipulate, to control, coming very strongly into the science of genetics. It rightfully arose under Gabrielle. It has not yet rightfully been transformed under Michael into a very different way of looking at the forces of reproduction and birth. So there we have these two great streams, the consciousness soul, in which the individual wants to break free of everything and only be contemplating itself, acting out of its completely individualized nature, and the Gabrielic forces, which bring a necessary counterbalance to this, in which the force of family, reproduction, heredity, love and marriage, we could say, all of this arises strongly out of Gabrielle. To look at it another way, the consciousness soul is the accelerator pedal, and Gabrielle is the brake pedal.